Going Linux, episode 86, listener feedback. Welcome to the Going Linux podcast. I'm your host, Larry Bushy.
And I'm your co-host, Tom. Whether you're new to Linux, moving from Windows to Linux, or just thinking about upgrading to Linux, this podcast will provide you with valuable information and advice that'll help you in Going Linux.
Currently, we create 3 episodes a month. We release listener feedback episodes at the beginning of each month and user experience episodes near the end.
Following the third Tuesday of each month, we post Larry's appearances on the live Computer America show.
In the user experience episodes, we take 2 months to cover a topic. First, an introduction, then an in-depth look at the Linux operating system and its applications.
In today's episode, listener feedback. We hope that you'll find this and all of our episodes helpful in learning about Linux and its applications and using them to get things done.
Well, Tom, you've been having a little trouble with Ubuntu Karmic lately, huh?
It's karma, because I've been bragging or something. I should have knocked wood. I've been telling everybody all along that when a new release comes along, I just do an upgrade. I don't do a new install. And this time I did an upgrade, and I ran into the problems a lot of other people have run into. So I'm not doing that anymore. And as a matter of fact, from now on, I'm only going with long-term support versions of Ubuntu.
Yeah, well, I didn't have such bad experience. I installed a 64-bit version, clean install, not an upgrade, because I was already on the 32-bit version before, and I don't think you can upgrade from 32 to 64. I think if you do the upgrade, it'll upgrade you to whatever version you're currently using as far as 32 or 64-bit operating systems.
That sounds right.
Yeah, so I decided, as I normally do anyway, to go with a fresh install and to try 64-bit, and almost everything is working. And one of the things that's not working, that was working under the 32-bit version, was my little mouse trackpad. There's a button on my HP laptop that allows me to lock the trackpad.
Right.
It wasn't working in, let's see, Hardy. It did work in Jaunty, and now that we're on Karmic, it isn't working again, but that could be because it's the 64-bit version, so I don't know.
And that can be a pain in the butt, because if you don't have that switch to turn off the trackpad, you'll be typing away and accidentally touch that surface and jump up or down the page or...
Yeah, and then you're typing somewhere you didn't intend to.
Right.
So anyhow, that's a minor irritation for me. Everything else seems to work, even the things that didn't work before when I tried the 64-bit version. So my installation went extremely smoothly. Almost everything is working. It fixed some of the problems that I had with some of the Audacity settings. I think I mentioned that when I did one of the effects to compress the audio, I do a little bit of compression on it before I save the file, and the compression setting sliders weren't quite right. It was a user interface thing. The sliders didn't have anywhere to slide. So that's been fixed. Some of the other issues that I was having with the website editor, Composer, those things have been fixed as well. So I'm pretty happy with a 64-bit version. The one little hardware button not working is nothing compared to some of the issues I was having before. So my recommendation to you, Tom, is fresh install, fresh install, fresh install. And if you want to stick with the long-term support release, that's fine too.
But that's where I'm going from now on. Fresh install fresh every time install. And only long-term support.
Yep. Yeah. Every time. Except for that once when I upgraded from 6.06 to 6.10. That was the only time that I was able to upgrade successfully. And since then, every time I try, something goes wrong and I end up fresh installing. So I've given up. I'm fresh installing until I hear a lot of people saying the upgrade works. So that's where we're at with the karmic karma.
Yeah.
On another note, I recently found the linuxinstall.net podcast. And that's not to be confused with the Linux Install podcast that my friend and former co-host Serge Ray started and was taken over by some other folks. This is linuxinstall.net. And I wanted to recommend it to our listeners. Brian and Joe over there link to a number of articles, how-to videos, and podcasts with the goal of letting their listeners decide for themselves whether Linux is suitable for their needs. So they write and produce audio content that focuses more than we do on Linux news and implementing Linux in a corporate environment. So there's some excellent content there for people trying to get their company to adopt Linux. So if you're in that category, check out the linuxinstall.net podcast at linuxinstall.net.
Excellent. And as soon as I'm fully functional again, I will do that.
Okay. Well, and we have to explain. Well, maybe we don't have to, but we're going to explain that you are recording this episode. How, Tom?
I booted a live CD of 9.04. So my hard drive isn't even being touched at all. And then I installed Skype, an older version of Skype. And then I installed Skype Call Recorder.
Yeah.
Excellent program. And that's how you're hearing me now.
So we'll see if this works.
Right.
If you don't hear this, you'll know it didn't work. All right. Well, Tom, let's start as usual with our audio feedback. And the first one is from Paul in Finland, who is correcting my pronunciation.
Guys, gosh, it just occurred to me that you guys can't reply to me since I'm sending in audio feedback. Well, in any case, sending in feedback in response to episode 83, where at the beginning of the show, you guys were talking about Appnr, APPNR.com, and Larry started mentioning that up in the right-hand corner, there were some options where you could choose what languages you wanted to see this site in. And let me just play a clip from that.
Oh, and I noticed that in the upper right-hand corner, it also gives you a whole bunch of different languages you can choose. So if your native language is not English, you can choose Espanol, you can choose Suomi, Francais, Italiano.
Wanted to make a slight correction to Larry's pronunciation there. I think most of those were pretty good, but that second one he really did butcher bad. The reason I know this is I'm talking to you from Finland, and that language that he tried to say as like Suomi or something is actually Suomi and means Finnish in Finnish. So just thought I would point that out. Also, in response to Bill's feedback, where he was complaining about you guys responding to people's emails, you know, where they write in, "Hi, Larry and Tom," and you say, "Hi, John," or whatever. I actually have to second Bill's comment that is really annoying when you guys do that. But at the same time, it's also like part of you guys' show. And I actually look forward to hearing that annoying bit of wasted listening time or what have you after you've introduced someone's new feedback letter. So I would vote not to stop and just let it keep being annoying. It's funny. I actually enjoy it. Anyway, really enjoy the show and have a good one.
Hi, Paul. Thank you so much for correcting Larry on that. I was going to correct him. As soon as he said it, I knew it was wrong because my father was a Finnish carpenter. Ba-dum-bum. And as far as the hello thing goes, we don't say hi unless you do. If you type, "Hi, Larry and Tom," it's just polite for us to say hi back. And sort of funny in a strange way. So if anybody objects to us saying hi to them, don't say hi. Just start typing your comment or question.
Right. Exactly. Next, Greg, who works for my company, that I work for in my day job, sent us several audio files. And in his email, Greg said, "You guys do a fine job. I love the humor and the way you two play off of each other. Larry, your education as a trainer really shows with words like absolutely, yes, right, and other firm positive words in constant use." So let's play Greg's file now.
"Hello, Larry and Tom. This is Gregory Cross. Larry, I'm recording this on our mutual employer's company-issued PDA, so it may sound pretty bad. My apologies if that's the case. I'm headed out on a service call, and I've recently downloaded the Hall 83 of the Going Linux podcasts, and they have been good company as I'm traveling around. I recently decided I would try VMware, or I should say virtual machine, because I used Sun VirtualBox, and loaded it onto my installation of Zendros Linux, which is now about 3 years old, so it's a bit out of date. And the VirtualBox loaded up and worked just fine. And I put Windows XP SP2 on it, and seemed to run everything pretty well. It did not automatically detect my second optical drive. It picked up the CD-ROM drive, but not the DVD. But I didn't mess with it to see if I could make it do it. But everything else seemed to work fine. Slow, I'll have to say, but it did work. My machine only has one gig of RAM, and sorry about that. Mapping software talking to me. It has a XP 3200 AMD processor in it too, so it's only a single core processor. But I was quite pleased with the results, so I want to try using VMware, which operates a little differently. Rather than operating as an application within a window within Linux, VMware operates without a host operating system and provides multiple windows for multiple operating systems to operate in. So with that in mind, I'm starting to build a nice 64-bit machine with a multiprocessor or multi-core processor and 4 gigabytes of RAM, and we'll see how that works out. So, thanks for the program. Keep up the good work. Bye now.
Thanks, Greg. And Greg also mentioned that it kind of threw him a curve that the PDA recorded a file in AMR format. He used a free converter to try to get it to OGG, and the OGG didn't happen, but he was able to send this, and in 3 other messages, in MP3 format. In his second message, Greg asks a question.
"Hey, Larry and Tom, this is Greg Cross again. I'm really enjoying your podcast. I had a couple of questions to ask. I installed Ubuntu Server 8.10. on one of my computers for my home network, and it does not come with a graphical user interface, so I went to the community bulletin board and found some instructions and got XFCE installed, which works fine. And when I heard the podcast about doing the Control-Alt-Backspace, I had to try it. And yeah, it shuts down the graphical user interface right now, but it does not restart. And that's because the server software came without the graphical user interface in the first place. I have to manually start the graphical user interface. So that's not such a big deal anyway. I was looking in the man pages on apt-get and noticed that there is both a update and an upgrade command. And so I tried the update, and by golly, it updated everything, and I was real happy about that. And a couple of weeks went by, and I got to thinking, well, 8.10 is getting kind of old. 9.10 is out now. So I screwed up my nerve and gave a try with the upgrade instead of update. And it seemed to work, but, you know, when I boot up, it still says it's version 8.10 on the command line there. So I'm wondering, what's the difference between update and upgrade? Did it actually upgrade to a new kernel, or is it the same old kernel, and what changed? Maybe you can give me some clarification on that. I'd appreciate it. Thanks, guys. See ya, Greg.
Well, Greg, the difference between update and upgrade. Update is simply updating the repositories. So when you thought you were actually doing the updates, you were just updating the repositories. It wasn't installing anything. So when you did sudo apt-get update, that's what was happening. It was just refreshing the repositories to see what was new.
Right. It's getting a fresh list. That's all.
Yes. And when you type in sudo apt-get upgrade, that's when it installs upgrades, not to the distribution, but rather upgrades to applications, kernel upgrades, security patches, and other parts of the current distribution. What you need to do if you want to do an upgrade to the distribution is to type sudo apt-get space dist, D-I-S-T, dash upgrade, and that will upgrade to the next distribution from what you're on. And you said you were on 8.04, if I remember correctly. So that will upgrade you to 8.10. Once that upgrade's finished, you'll have the option to upgrade from 8.10 to 9.04. Then you'll have to wait for that to finish before you can upgrade from 9.04 to 9.10. And with Tom's and my experience on upgrades, that's just way too many chances for something to go wrong. I would recommend that you reinstall 9.10 if that's where you think you want to go.
Yeah, do a fresh install.
Yeah.
Or if you want to go with the dist dash upgrade, cross your fingers, toes, and eyes and hope that you don't crash and burn.
Yeah, and many people have better luck than Tom and I, but...
I was lucky up until now.
Yes. Well, good luck.
I shouldn't have bragged about it.
That was the jinx, I think.
Yeah.
Our final audio feedback for today is from Brendan, who sent us an audio file thanking us for picking up where Chess Griffin left off when he ended his Linux Reality podcast after 100 episodes. Let's hear Brendan now.
Hi, Larry and Tom. My name is Brendan Cornelius, and I am sending this audio message all the way from the lovely city of Durban in South Africa. I think I am one of the first people from Africa to send you an audio comment. I'd like to say thank you for the wonderful work you do with the Going Linux podcast. I heard of your podcast through Linux Reality with Chess Griffin. If Chess is listening, I'd also like to say thank you, Chess, for the wonderful work you did. And thanks, Larry and Tom, for picking up where Linux Reality left off. You guys are doing an amazing job, and I wish you all the best for the future. Take it easy. Goodbye.
Very good, Brendan. Thank you. And I believe that you're right that you are the first listener on the African continent that has sent us feedback. So thanks very much for that. Any other continents out there? Antarctica? Come on.
Yeah, hey, where is everybody? We need audio feedback. Yes, we have had some email feedback from the African continent, but this is definitely the first audio feedback. So thanks, Brendan. Thanks very much.
And next up, from time to time, we get requests to mention shows and conferences on our podcast. And many times, because we try to record each episode in advance, those requests don't reach us in time. Joss wrote us with one that is actually for something that's well in advance. Joss says, "Hi, guys."
Hi, Joss.
And Joss, I'm about to murder your last name. I'm so sorry. This is Joss Purvit from the Netherlands. I am a volunteer in the KDE community, and I wanted to mention the upcoming Camp KDE. From January 15th to 22nd, the annual U.S. meeting of the KDE community will take place at the University of California in sunny San Diego. So, if you want to meet cool people, hear interesting talks, and see what the future of the free desktop will look like, you should be there. It's open to anyone, so you're all invited. And while there will be some technical and less technical talks, we're still looking for more interesting topics. So if you have something to say, let us know. It'd be great if you could mention this on your show, of course. See you in San Diego. Greets, and have a great show. Oh, and a web link would be http://camp.kde.org.
And if any of our listeners know of any events that are coming up in the future, the not too near future, so that we can record them and actually send them out in time for it to make sense, just email them to us or send your own audio comment, and we'll play your audio comment with the announcement on our show. And you can email that to goinglinux@gmail.com. Tom, in the last listener feedback episode, we mentioned Appnr, APPNR.com, for installing apps on Ubuntu and Ubuntu derivatives. Well, Brian forwarded us a press release with announcements for similar app install sites for Linux. There are apparently several. All My Apps is one of those at allmyapps.com. allmyapps.com. And when I went there, it immediately recognized that I'm running Ubuntu 9.10 and took me right to the downloads for that distribution and that release. The supported operating systems on the All My Apps site are Ubuntu 9.10, Ubuntu 9.04, 8.10, 8.04, as well as some operating systems that are kind of not used too often, like Windows 7, Vista, and XP. Don't hear about those too much, so I'm not sure why they're supporting those. Anyway, it's an excellent way, even if your friends are using that other operating system, to get them introduced to open source applications that'll work in that operating system, so that when they do move to Ubuntu, they're really familiar with those favorite Linux applications that we've become so familiar with.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Good way of putting it. Thank you. And then some other sites that Brian sent to us include GetDeb, which is www.getdeb.net, and GetDeb is Golf, Echo, Tango, Delta, Echo, Bravo.net. Apt Linux is an add-on for your browser, and there's an article that we will include in our show notes. Thanks very much, Brian.
Yes, thanks very much. All right, next, James wrote, "Hi, Larry and Tom."
Hi, James. Hi, James.
"I am currently listening to your last appearance on Computer America. As a blind computer user myself, I thought I'd offer you an explanation as to why Richard was unable to use OpenOffice with his screen reader. Basically, you need other bits to make it work, such as Java Runtime Environment and the Java Access Bridge. You then need to switch on accessibility within OpenOffice, but this is not easy. Remember, Tom, this is on that other kind of minor operating system that begins with a W he's talking about here."
Oh, yeah. I've heard about that.
Mm-hmm. So he continues, "But this is not easy, perhaps impossible with some screen readers. Perhaps the only exception is NVDA, which is itself free and open source. However, having played with it and after trying to get it to work, I've given up for the time being as OpenOffice was not very accessible, even with tweaks. Take care, James. Well, thanks, James. That's really interesting stuff, and it shows you that if you think Linux is complicated and difficult to set up, and maybe in this case, it's actually easier to get set up than that other operating system, because under Linux with the Orca screen reader and OpenOffice, it works just fine.
And, you know, as an aside, you know, I wish I had saved this article, but I read an article, I believe, from Slashdot, where a lady was talking about installing Ubuntu, and her five-year-old said, "Can I install Ubuntu?" And so the lady took an extra computer and wiped it and put the disk in the drive and said, "Go nuts."
Mm-hmm.
And the kid did have to, a couple of times, go and ask her older brother. And her older brother was six. And the kids figured out that most of the time, if it's asking you a question, just hit enter.
Uh-huh.
And they got it to go. All right. It weren't all the cool extras and everything, but they had a running copy of Ubuntu.
Yeah. Nice. Yeah, it really is simple. Try that with the W thing.
Ooh. Mommy, what's the blue screen of death? I think you should take that part out. That was hateful.
I liked it. Okay. I liked it.
Okay. Next up, John lets us know about a distribution for blind and visually impaired Linux users. He says, "Hi, Larry and Tom." Hi, John.
Hi, John. Everybody likes that now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Larry, I just listened to your last Computer America show where you tried to help a fellow Linux user who was blind. The advice you gave him was very good and very helpful. I am not sight challenged, so I never knew Ubuntu had this capability. Now I do, if anyone ever needs this kind of help. The reason I was writing is that I know of another distro that is made for the sight challenged called AdrianOpix. Here are a few notes and links about it. And now I should say that Adrian is spelled A-D-R-I-A-N-E, and Nopix is spelled K-N-O-P-P-I-X.
Right.
AdrianOpix is a variation that is intended for blind and visually impaired people, which can be used entirely without vision-oriented output devices. It was released in the third quarter of 2007 as a live CD. AdrianOpix is named after Adrian Knopper, the wife of Klaus Knopper, the developer of Knopix. Adrian has a visual impairment and has been assisting Klaus with the development of the software. The name Adrian is also a backronym for Audio Desktop Reference Implementation and Networking Environment. AdrianOpix is intended not only for the blind, but also for beginners who don't know much about computers. It uses the SUSE Blinux screen reader for normal output. And we will put the links that John included in our show notes. Thanks to you guys for your help and community spirit. Hope this helps. John. Very good, John.
Yes, and I actually went and downloaded a copy of the ISO image of the Knopix Adrian 6.2 live CD just to try it out. And when you boot to the live CD, it immediately comes up in a text menu with the screen reader active reading the menu.
No kidding. So no, it's saying kidding. What you're looking at out loud.
Right. So it reads the menu, it gives you the choices, and one of the choices is to go into a graphical user interface. So it can also be used by sighted people or by people who have visual impairments that are not complete blindness and who can use the graphical user interface perhaps with a high contrast background or something like that. So it's very usable, very accessible, and very easy to create this live CD. Just like any other live CD, you burn it to a CD and it works beautifully.
Very cool. Thanks, John.
Yeah, thanks very much, John. Our next email is from Graham, who wrote, "Hi, Larry and Tom."
Hi, Graham.
Hi, Graham. "I am really liking your show and encourage you to leave it all just the way it is. So what if Ubuntu is pronounced Ubuntu, Ubuntu, or Ubuntu, or if you both greet people when you are reading their email? It's all part of the entertainment of the podcast."
There you go.
"You have helped me in the past with some of the issues I have had with my migration to my personal Linux-dominated computer world. I have a question about mounting of external storage devices into Linux, and specifically Ubuntu 9.10. I have a 1 terabyte external hard drive and an iRiver E100 OGG player. I try to only download OGG files. The OGG player has some base memory, and I have added a micro SD card to give it an extra 4 gigabytes. I use the SD card to store my podcast so I can listen on the train, commute to and from work. The 1 terabyte drive is plugged in most of the time and is given the label disk by the operating system. When I plug in the OGG player, the base memory mounts and reads as E100, while the SD card memory within the OGG player mounts and is given the label disk-1. I have told GPotter to load my podcast onto disk-1. This all works fine for most of the time. The problem is when the external drive is not powered up when Ubuntu starts. Then, when I plug in the OGG player, the two memories are labeled E100 and disk, not disk-1. Now, GPotter doesn't know where to store the uploaded podcasts. Can you suggest a way around this problem? Can I relabel the SD card so it will be automatically mounted by another name? My Windows-loving son uses small issues like this as a weapon against me in my quest to have Linux dominate the desktop world, so a simple solution would be appreciated. Keep up the good work. Graham." He also signs it Burn Dog.
Hey, Graham, excellent question. I had the same problem, and you're right. There is an easy fix, as you suspected. You just need to give the drive a label. Here's how. First, plug the player into the USB port and wait for it to check in. Now, unmount both drives, the player and the SD card. From here on in, proceed with caution. Start the gparted partition editor. In Ubuntu, you'll find that in System, Administration, Partition Editor.
And by the way, Tom, if it's not there by default, you may have to go to the repositories and install it. Just search for Partition Editor, you'll find it.
Right, it's the word parted with a G in front of it.
Right.
Okay, so now you've got the Partition Editor running. Use the drop-down menu at the upper right to select the E100 drive, just for now. You'll know it by its size in gigabytes. Do not select your computer hard drive, which is probably /dev/sda. Note that the drive has a label. It's E100. Okay, now go back up on the upper right and select the SD card. No label on there, right? In the main window now, right-click on that partition and a dialog menu will appear. Click on Label, and you'll have a new dialog that'll open and give you a place to type the new label. I called mine MicroSD, but you can call yours Tom if you like. Okay, next step. Hit the Apply button after thinking about it for at least 30 seconds. You really, really, really have the right drive, right? Okay, then hit it. Close GParted. Pull the player off of the USB port and plug it back in. It should mount using the label every time. And I ignored the warning about backing up the disk because there was really nothing critical on the drive and I didn't lose any data. your results may vary. Try it out. Let us know how it goes. And thanks for the question. Excellent question.
Yes, thanks, Graham. Our next email is from Kevin, who's a real gamer. He wrote us about our introduction to gaming on Linux. Hey, Larry. Hey, Tom.
Hey, Kevin.
Hey, Kevin. Before I say anything about the podcast, I'd like to say that I love how you greet your emails by saying, hey, and that everyone who disagrees can do simply that and disagree. It's unique, and I like it. That said, I'm a semi-serious gamer, and I saw that you were doing a podcast on the games available for Linux. Immediately, I knew I was going to be disappointed. No offense. Historically, my experience with gaming on Linux desktop has not been a happy one. I come from a gaming scene that plays major titles like Call of Duty, Left 4 Dead, and Portal, and has built a culture and community around games such as these. So when moving to Linux and asking for help on installing them, it can be more than a little annoying when people simply suggest I become a casual gamer and just play Alien Arena, which in my opinion is a terrible substitute for a game like Call of Duty. I want the games I paid for to work in Linux, and I've seen videos with people playing them on Ubuntu, but for some reason I can't get them to work. Ever. No one wants to touch the issue because it's a hot potato of legal issues, which is understandable. But if this is the case, then why are so many other things with such issues making headway while we're left to blame the manufacturers? I had hopes a while back that Valve was working on a Steam client for Linux, but with the lack of news out of that department for quite some time, it seems unlikely that it's coming around anytime soon. I was also hoping that you might not refer to gaming in Linux as playing something like Mahjong or Solitaire, because it's a pet peeve of mine when people refer to other people who play those games as being gamers. I did, however, expect this due to a wide lack of real games available for Linux community. I was wondering, though, why you had not mentioned running Steam under Wine. I'm just guessing that hot potato stuff, in which case you're more than pardoned, but if not, then why? Sudega as well. Because despite being a pay service, it does allow a more thorough compatibility of many of the games that I like to play. As a gamer, it is upsetting to me that Linux provides no way for me to switch over. It always feels like we get a big middle finger from the open source crowd who just simply tell us to switch to open source games. I must say that this is quite disgruntling for me, As such, I have recently made the switch on my desktop to the more recent other operating system because it plays things perfectly. I just wonder if you have any other options for someone like me who is very addicted to Steam and cannot switch over to Linux until those games work. It's always been suggestion after suggestion of alternative games when all I'm trying to do is make the games I paid for work in the operating system of my choice. I hope that you can help or maybe at least shed some light for others out there that do not have time to port things over, that there are serious gamers interested in Linux that aren't switching because there are no ports available. Thanks again, Kevin. P.S. Thanks for the link to DJL. Its contents are still Linux alternatives, but it's nice to know there's headway being made for a service of some sort.
Well,
you got it, Tom.
As far as being a hot potato that we're staying away from, Kevin, let me touch your hot potato. The only reason we stayed simple is because we do two episodes, an introduction and an advanced. So maybe in the advanced episode, we will have some great advice for you to help you out. And maybe it won't be enough because neither Larry nor I are really serious gamers.
That's true.
Yeah. But hopefully we can help you, and hopefully there will be other listeners who will write in, call in, record, and send audio files, and give us all some advice on other places to go. This really is an interesting topic, and I know there are a lot of people interested in it. Let's roll with it. Come on, people. What do you know about gaming in Linux? Share it.
Yes, and one thing I have to say about Kevin's email is this. I would not be too quick to dismiss blaming the manufacturers or the distributors of the games. It's those folks who need to take the initiative to take their games and make them compatible with Linux. You wouldn't think of taking a Windows game and expecting it to run on a Mac. I don't think you should expect a Windows game to run on Linux either. The only reason some of these games will work is because Linux has a utility like Wine to work. And I know Wine will work on a Mac as well, but I don't think that most people even think of running Windows programs on a Mac and expecting them to run under any circumstances. So I really do think we as Linux users are the ones who need to put pressure on the manufacturers of games, the manufacturers of software, the manufacturers of hardware to make those things compatible with Linux so that as this Linux operating system is becoming more and more popular and receiving wider and wider distribution among users, that we are expecting that these companies will make their products compatible with the operating system of our choice.
Right. And it is happening. It's starting to happen. And that snowball is growing. So don't give up.
Yeah.
And our next email, Ron wrote, hello. Hey, Ron.
Hello, Ron.
I listened to your latest podcast, and you guys never talked about Play on Linux. Now, maybe you're not aware of it, but their goal is to allow Windows games to be played on Linux. They're also working on getting other programs to work on Linux. One program I wish was working on Linux would be Dreamweaver CS3 and 4. Adobe's red tape organization is ridiculously avoiding the port over to Linux for some strange reasons. I don't care if they charge for it on Linux. I'd buy it. I'm not worried about Linux software all being free. Most is, as you know, but Adobe is obviously a for-profit company, and just to get away from the evil empire and its crappy software, I would be willing to pay for it, and I know several people who would also be willing. Not only that, but if the Adobe suite was available on Linux, many people would do away with Windblows. Maybe Microsoft has a deal with Adobe not to do this, as they know it would greatly affect Windows. SUSE is in cahoots with Microsoft. Did you know this? I do not support SUSE, Mandriva, or Fedora for me. Take care, Ron.
All right, Ron. Well, you know, I think Adobe is one of those companies that's at least trying to make some of its software compatible with Linux. I mean, they have the PDF reader and various other programs that work under Linux. I kind of think that maybe their games are more difficult to port over to Linux. What do you think?
Yes, and the people that are writing the games need to realize that Linux people will buy games. I recently bought a wonderful, wonderful program, game program called Penumbra, and I cannot speak highly enough of it. It is just spooky, scary, wonderful, dark. The physics engine is beautiful, and when I die, it kind of subtracts from my soul. There are paid distributions of games for Linux. And as we said before, things are coming along. As far as Play on Linux, we will cover that at least a little bit in the advanced episode.
Yeah, that's great. Thanks, Ron. Our next email is from Carlos, who provided us with some feedback for a previous listener. Carlos writes, "Hi, guys.
Hey, Carlos.
Hi, Carlos. In answer to John's question about a podcatcher that he can use to handle queues and synchronization with Linux, I use Amarok, and it can keep a transfer queue with new episodes and move items from the queue as they were transferred to the player. I use an iRiver player, but any device that can be mounted as a USB drive can be connected and synchronized with Amarok. The podcast files are not actually deleted, as Tom feared. They are just removed from the transfer queue, but you can go back to the playlist and listen to previous episodes again if you want. Also, if there are more items in the list than the media player memory can take, the non-transferred ones remain in the list for the next time. Keep it up, Carlos."
I really like that last feature, that it will watch the memory allocation on the player and save them for next time.
You bet.
And then Carlos followed up. He says, "Hi again. I just tested the new OpenSUSE 11.2 with Amarok 2.1.1 and saw that this version does not have the devices tab and cannot synchronize. As the old version 1.4, which I'm currently using, is able to do. So the information above is valid for the previous version of Amarok, which is part of the KDE 3.5 family. Let's hope that Amarok 2 catches up in terms of features soon, as the rest of the KDE 4 family is doing. Cheers, Carlos." Thanks, Carlos.
Yes.
And my one little note about Amarok, I have tried it. I know so many people are happy with it. But with my Sansa MP3 player, here's what happens. I plug in the player, it mounts. I start Amarok, and Amarok kicks it off. It's gone. I unplug the player, plug it back in as many times as I like, but it will not appear again. It won't mount until I kill Amarok, and then it's back. So I don't know what that's about. I haven't gone into it, but it's kind of putting me off on Amarok.
Yeah. And especially if Amarok 2 has fewer features, that's not something that I can recommend. I used Amarok when I was using KDE, and it was the 1.4 version and earlier versions, and it worked just as well as Carlos suggests. One of the problems with KDE 4 is that most of the applications are being rewritten, and this is an example of one that is being rewritten from scratch and is trying to catch up with the features it used to have. And that's one of the reasons, one of the many reasons, that I moved to GNOME.
Yeah, I'm staying with GNOME too. Or, as one of our listeners was insulted by the pronunciation, GNOME.
Yes. All right, and our final email is from Richard, who wrote, "Hi, Larry and Tom." Hi, Richard. "Listening to episode 83. Tell Bill when he has his own show, he can run it any way he wants to. When you are teaching new people, you have to teach to the folks that are less knowledgeable. If Bill has a problem with the way you pronounce Ubuntu, he really doesn't like how Russ and I pronounce it. Tell Bill to please refer to sentence 2 of this email for the pronunciation of Ubuntu and GNU. Thanks, guys. Great show. Keep up the good work. By the way, hi, Larry and Tom."
Hi, Richard.
And that's from Richard Bailey of the Black Sparrow Media and Linux in the Ham Shack and Resonant Frequency and all that amateur radio stuff. And we listen to your podcast too, Richard. We really do.
And we have links to that in our show notes.
You bet we do.
BlackSparrowMedia.com.
Yes. Okay.
As a new feature I'd like to introduce, I think we should say goodbye to Richard.
Okay.
Goodbye, Richard. Bye, Richard.
So that wraps up our episode with a goodbye to Richard and to everyone else. In our next episode, Gaming with Linux Advanced. Until then, you can go to the articles and show notes at goinglinux.com for more information, detailed instructions, screencasts, and illustrations, as always.
Email us with comments, questions, and suggestions. And remember, if you have a topic that you want us to cover on the show, use our Podcast Alley button to leave your topic suggestion while you vote for us on their site.
You can also send us an audio comment by email. We'll play it on our show. Our email address is goinglinux@gmail.com.
You can follow our show updates on Twitter and Identica. We are Going Linux, all one word. And you can download the episodes from the website, or you can use the Flash Player to play them right on the show notes page.
And one more addition, we have a Facebook page now too, and over 70 followers on Facebook, and they've actually written in some suggestions as well, so we'll include those kinds of comments on future episodes. And speaking of future episodes, you can get future episodes delivered directly to your computer automatically as soon as a new episode is available. For instructions on how to subscribe to a podcast, go to subscribe.goinglinux.com in your web browser. Until next time, thanks for listening.
Talk to you later.
Music provided by Mark Blasco at podcastthemes.com.